Hey.
Hello. I'm trying to figure
What?
out where to hide my running shoes now that I'm not running because Beethoven will eat my lace.
Beethoven. Oh, that
Christy made him
mischievous little
into,
Disney character.
I know she made him into an AI Disney character. She's been really leaning into the AI. I'm gonna put him
Well, I don't know
with the
what happened.
chips.
Like, I didn't have to work today, so I just spent entirely too long making horrifying AI headshots on this app.
We've discovered a lot that AI doesn't know, which
AI
is
is terrible.
hands, real issue with hands, and really what to do with them. Like, I guess that's like not a computer thing. It's like, because they always
You
want to
don't
put,
have hands. So.
well, you have like multiple hands on a hand. At one stage, I was drinking out of a hand bottle.
There's a hand bottle. I mean, it just gets progressively more like, what is going on? I really want to stress though that like it felt like I was looking at an image of what my students turn in when they use AI.
Yeah, I know.
Because
You start to
it's
realize
like there are elements here that are correct,
it. That's right. But
but there's
over, but
something
this
horrifyingly wrong.
and also racist.
Also racist.
Even against cats, we discovered that.
I
So,
forgot the sugar. I have to get the sugar. Hold on.
oh shoot, I didn't get the sugar either. And the so Christy, as we're actually going to assemble our drink on air today because we were definitely not behind. I'm glad that Christy didn't work today because I feel like I actually need this drink today as opposed to just desiring it. Because I had a day.
Okay, I have sugar. You did have a day. You did not spend your entire day making horrible
I did enjoy you sending them to me. There was one where we have a friend who is a friend of a friend, and she just disappears
She
in the
did. She
pictures. But in
like
every picture, she
every
just.
picture she increasingly disappears. At one point, she was a camera.
She was Asian, which, listeners, she's a white person,
She's
very.
a white, she's a super white
Think
person.
she's
She just
very
has dark
claims very Irish roots, so
Yeah.
but yeah, she just but I don't know what it was. Like she just faded into the back.
Faded
She was out.
away.
So note to self, if you start to get into a car that's driven by AI, just like watch out for our friend Colleen and your hands. Any person of color, I'd be concerned about.
Yep.
And
Just don't. I mean, it was so bad.
we'll post some. They were delightful. We need to post one of
Of
Colleen
Colleen.
changing racial demographics.
Colleen just becoming a camera.
Don't know why. Okay, so Stuart got me an actual proper he invested in the podcast this Christmas. He
He
got me
did.
a microphone, which I have not used.
I was gonna say, have you tried it out? It's the same one I have that I am using at this moment. Oh no, I was supposed to put that in the shaker.
Aren't you supposed to put everything in the shaker?
I think it says pour all ingredients into shaker filled with ice, and then you have to shake 40 times. I just want you to know.
I'm not gonna do that. Like I've got real measurements here, which is as far as I go. Okay. 40 times. Who needs to run when I'm shaking a
I
drink
don't
40
have real
times?
measurements. I have
I
a
do.
shot glass and a song in my heart.
Here's the deal though. I can't see it because I don't have my glasses. It's very small. Okay.
I have the rum and the gin and the sugar and the lime wedge. I think I'm good to shake.
Oh gosh, you're shaking already? Did you just put it in? You
I just put them all in.
didn't measure it? Oh my
That's so
gosh.
loud. I'm sorry. I'm going to shake farther away. Okay.
I was gonna try to do this properly.
Are you supposed to put the lime in? I'm just going to put some lime in it.
I think you're supposed to just add the lime wedge as a garnish.
I don't want to do that either.
Because
why? What's the purpose of it?
Don't shake the lime. Yeah, it says garnish with lime.
I'm going to shake it with the...
Oh my gosh. This is straight alcohol, everybody.
Can you tell me the measurements for the different things? In our audience, actually. In our audience.
So as an introduction, we got this book from my dear friend Catherine, who also gave it to her dad, and he worked through it like every day. They made the drink for the day. So just know that he is dedicated. But it's called Drinking with the Saints, and it the Sinner's Guide to a Holy Happy Hour. And it's got a drink for every day. It's got drinks for the season. So like right now it's Lent, and we could be doing a Lenten drink. But we're not doing any of that. I picked one just randomly. So it's July 25th. It's St. Christopher's drink. So it's 1.5 ounces of rum.
And I was going to go buy clear rum. I don't know the technical.
Oh yeah, I didn't. I have dark rum.
Me too. But I think that's right. Because
it doesn't actually, it's sometimes it's really specific. Like some of these recipes is like use this very specific type of liqueur. And this one is not, it just says rum.
Yeah, but it talks about him going to the like Caribbean, right? So that would be dark.
Oh, yes, that's true. So it would be spiced rum.
I read it. Okay.
I did also read it. Okay, so 1.5 ounces of rum.
Okay, rum's in.
And then 3/4 ounces of gin.
Ugh. Okay. Hold on. I'm looking. Oh, gosh. Man, those glasses. This is the thing about glasses, guys. 3/4. Is that 0.75?
0.75.
Okay.
And then a fourth teaspoon of sugar.
What in the world does that mean?
1/4 teaspoon of sugar.
No, I heard your words. I don't feel like that means anything.
That was not what you were wanting in the world. And then you garnish with your lime wedge.
Well, I put some lime in there. I'm not going to lie.
I cheated and used lime juice because I don't have a lime wedge at the moment.
Oh, I actually do have 1/4. And by me, I mean not me.
Not you.
Okay. Christy, I straight did this drink right.
I know. This is one of those times that we are like.
Actually done like measurement.
We're doing it correctly-ish. You know? All right.
I hope it's good.
It's just straight alcohol. There is not a mixer in here.
Do you know anything about St. Christopher?
I can tell you about him.
Because I'll shake vigorously.
Okay, I'll share about St. Christopher. So Christopher means Christ bearer. But he was a giant man, 7.5 feet tall, who wanted to serve the greatest king ever. And then eventually became convinced that Jesus Christ was the greatest king ever and became a Christian. And so he started carrying people across a river as a ferryman. And then one day he agreed to carry a small child. And to his dismay, the child weighed an enormous amount. And Christopher realized that he was bearing Christ, who had on his shoulders the weight of the world.
Oh my gosh.
I know. When he got to the other side, he planted his staff in the ground and it became a palm tree with fruit. The miracle attracted many people, and now he is the patron saint of travelers, which is why you might see him on people's dashboards. But he is also, there was a second thing that he's a patron saint of. Hold on.
Fisherman.
Oh, plastic.
And fish.
Oh, wait, no.
Fisherman. I think so.
Maybe.
I'm going to tell you why I know this in a second.
Well, anyway, it says travelers on here.
Well, but also travelers.
Travelers. And he is often on dashboards. He is not the patron saint of plastic. I read that incorrectly. Anyway, you're supposed to drink the rum from St. Kitts, home of Brinley Gold Rum, but it does not specify that in the instructions. And like I said, it is often very specific. About like one time it says to specifically use Hendrick's gin.
Well, so like
This is a really short pour. I should have done a martini glass.
I know it is a little. It's a little guy, but
It's gonna pack a punch.
It's gonna pack a punch because there's nothing but alcohol in here. Saint Christopher, better help us on our travels. That's all I'm saying.
What I will say is the reason I know about Saint Christopher is what you will have heard from Christy and I is that we hate traveling.
We do.
It's a known thing.
We hate it a lot. We like to travel. We don't like the process of traveling.
Yeah, I think I'm going to die all the time. And I do, like, very dumb things on the regular. But I think that plane, I just can't trust it. So when I first started traveling a lot, probably in my late 20s, I got myself a little medallion of St. Christopher.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I used to wear it when I traveled. And then, because someone told me, I think it's when I went to the Middle East, someone told me about it. And then I looked it up. And yeah, the fisherman. It was something about fishermen. Okay,
fisherman something. I got a set of prayer beads in Greece that I take with me because they're good to fidget with. But I also feel like they've got some because they're prayer beads. They're something.
We become very Catholic.
We should become very Catholic. I become very Calvinist. I become very Catholic.
We change.
Whatever
we change.
Gets you on that plane.
It's almost like theology is a social construct, Christy. Strange.
It is strange. All right. Are you ready?
I'm sitting and the drink is in front of me. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers. I'm so scared. It's so... Oh gosh, I just sniffed it. Don't sniff it.
Oh, it's tasty. I mean, it's...
Whoa.
It is alcohol, but it doesn't taste bad.
No.
I think that...
I think doing the actual measurements and using the right alcohol actually worked out.
I think it did. I think this is why they give you recipes.
Guys, this is not bad.
This is actually,
but you know, I'm a rum lover. But
I'm a fan. I mean, I'm a gin lover and I like rum also. Mm. Mm-hmm.
This is good, but I'm going to have to slow my roll.
I'm going to put a couple of these ice cubes into my glass because.
Ooh, that's smart, Christy. Gosh. You should get a peach.
I should get a peach.
It's my favorite thing when my students are like, that's a really good point, Dr.
I enjoy when people say something to me and they're like, oh, that was really smart. And it's like, oh.
I know. And it's not like I'm like that about everything. Like you're like, I like busted out a fun elephant fact and you're like, oh, that's really smart. I'd be like, thanks. Or my fisherman. Fact. I was like, thanks. Here's the reason why I know that.
I know.
So like the religion stuff, I'm sort of like, yeah, that's why I'm here.
Sometimes my students will say things like, how did you learn all of this? And I'll be like, what do you, I mean, the same way everyone does. It's just
time.
It took me
time and tears.
1 million years. You are not going to learn all of these things in one semester, dear friend.
I went to get ice cubes and now have a pack of cats that are surrounding me. They're like little velociraptors. Kylo, go. No.
Do your cats like ice cubes?
I mean, probably right now they're on a diet. They love anything. Probably styrofoam if you put sugar on it.
My dog used to love ice cubes. We would give them.
Zero does for sure. They give them out in the summertime at Skip Camp or wherever that he goes to. That place he goes to. I guess it's okay to say places if it's positive. Like it's positive.
It's positive.
They're not gonna sue me.
No.
Free publicity. So anyway, yeah. So they do it because the dogs. Like they look like they're dying. Mm-hmm. I mean, not like of anyone's fault. It's just very hot in North Carolina. Yeah.
There's a dog bar called Dog Bar in St. Pete.
I went there and the dog was rolling in
a bucket. It's a kiddie pool of ice.
It's a kiddie pool of ice.
Because it's so hot here.
It's so hot, yeah. No, I wanted to roll with that dog.
I know. I
in the kiddie pool of ice.
Look at how cool you look.
Ooh, the ice cubes help.
The ice cubes do help. My recommendation to our listeners, if you're drinking along with us, put some ice cubes in this. It is good, though. I'm a fan.
I'm not mad at this. I think, Christy, I think we're stepping up. I think
this book that Catherine gave us, I have a couple of other ones marked that are not so intense, but some of the really like specific ones we're going to have to plan ahead, but we're going to try because some of them look really good.
Yeah. Though, really want to emphasize.
It is just all straight liquor alcohol.
And a tiny scoop. Come to find out 1/4 a teaspoon is very small.
It's very small.
Hey guys, really? Welcome to Theology on the Rocks.
Oh yeah, Theology on the Rocks. Hey, I'm Christy. That's Leah.
I'm on fire.
We are going to drink and talk about theology. We have like some exciting topics too.
We do. We have some fun stuff. Can I tell you just one anecdote first before? Is that there's been this sort of I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a city that has a very large population of young people.
Yes.
To the point where I told Christy the day that my dog is ageist because he never sees anyone.
Never seen an old person before.
He met my parents and just like went mental sauce. He's not, you know, they say some dogs are racist, some dogs don't like men or whatever. No, he just doesn't like old people in any form. I would say mostly men. But just any form, really. But anyway, that's a story for another day. But this story is that at the end of my road that I live on, they've done this sort of like war with signs.
Oh.
And I'll put them up. But it started with a CrossFit advertisement, and it says, "Are you mad?" And it's got a kettlebell on it. That's all it says. Are you mad? Okay. There's a QR code. Then the next day I drive up and there's the Are You Mad sign and then an advertisement for concrete.
Oh.
So it says, do you need concrete? So it said, are you mad? Do you need concrete?
Oh God. That's
and
like.
So, and so I laughed and went about my way. Well, today there's another edition. Someone else has decided to add. And it says Jesus saves behind the concrete sign. Are you mad? Do you need concrete?
Jesus saves. What an interesting, like.
I'm just waiting to see what tomorrow will bring.
The journey.
I know. You mad? You want to kill someone? Send them to the bottom of the ocean? Well, don't worry. Jesus saves. So go for it. I just like had all these narratives in my head. But so anyway.
Oh, man. Funny. I love sign wars. That's fantastic.
I know. And I don't know. Like the are you mad is an interesting thing. Although it did get my attention. So, you know.
Yeah.
And I went to South Carolina this weekend, which we'll talk about in a minute, but for reply signs, they try to evangelize you so intensely when you go to certain states. North Carolina, I don't see it really. I mean, I've driven a lot of North. I don't see it, but you hit South Carolina. Oh, man.
South Carolina does have a lot. Florida also has a lot.
There's a lot of like, and then it was funny because I was riding with my husband, Stuart, who's not from these lands. And there was a prayer you were supposed to pray. But keep in mind, I'm going down the interstate at like 70 miles an hour. And he said it. He was like, dear Lord. Da, da, da. And then he only got like two lines in. And he was like.
It's like trying to read it. Too fast. Slow down.
Did I?
No.
Caused my husband to go to hell because he wasn't able to
read. He wasn't able to pray the prayer, Leah.
I know. I'm so sorry. Oh, but Leah. it was just funny because you'd have to say the whole thing. You'd have to be going a solid 30 on the interstate. And like you
really need to slow down.
And he looked at me so like innocently and was like, how are people supposed to say the prayer that fast?
Like, no one does. It's okay.
I was like, I don't think it's about you. I think it's about them.
It is, yes.
They feel better. That's up to you. I mean, there's always just, like, the Jesus saves or the truth signs. Like, there's truth of God.
Yeah.
And there's a number.
Brimstone ones that are like, the devil is coming for you.
I prefer those because it's straight to the point. If they have a nice little flame image, you know, just really right at home. But this prayer was like multiple billboards long. He tried it.
Poor Sarah tried.
So y'all, if you're in charge of those billboards, you might want to shorten them. Just get right to the point. But
praying while driving is always also maybe a questionable decision.
Well, then also I was a little, when he said so sweetly, how am I supposed to do it that fast? I said, well, how am I supposed to do it at all?
Yeah. Like, I can't. Like, you can't read that. You should keep your eyes on the road.
So I'm supposed to be evangelized while driving. That feels unsafe. Can I tell you? That'll get me to heaven real quick.
I have to tell you this story because it's in reference to praying while driving. I'm going to make it as short as I can because there's a lot more to it. But essentially, I was my senior year of high school and my mom was begrudgingly driving me to school for reasons. And it was also trash day. So she grabbed the bag of trash and we lived on the top, like our house was like on the top of a hill. So the driveway went down the hill. We're going down the hill. I have my small dog on my lap and she's like, let's pray before we go. So I've like closed my eyes and she opened the door to throw the trash out. And I have my eyes closed cause we're praying. And, she went out the door with the trash.
Oh no. Did you keep going?
And yes. The car was not in park or anything. And so the van, it's a big conversion van, continues to go. And I'm like panicked because I don't know what to do. My mom, she just, all of a sudden I just heard her go, Christy.
Oh no.
I look over and it's like way too late for me to do anything.
Just got to emergency brake that beach.
The van just like, thankfully across the street, which was we were in a very residential kind of
Christy, last name that I won't insert. What in the world?
We hit the bushes across the street. Like the van just hits the bushes and then stops.
How old were you? Four? Did you know?
I was a senior in high school.
You know what an emergency brake is. Don't go in the road.
Look, if I could go back in time and tell you why I didn't pull the emergency brake, I could.
Did the Lord not speak to you in this prayer? The Lord did not speak to me.
You know what happened is that I just immediately wanted to protect my dog. I was we have to brace for impact.
Yeah, you do. Could have been T-boned straight to the other world. Lordy. Well, I'm glad that worked out.
Everyone was fine. My mom was fine. My dad was so pissed when he found out about it. He was like, you could have gotten run over. Like, she could have. She could have died. It was very bad. But, like, to this day.
Also, what was in that trash that sent a grown-ass woman flying through a door?
My mom also taught at my high school, and the whole entire day, I just was walking around telling people about the story and, like, cry laughing.
I bet she was really happy with
you. She was like, stop telling the story. I was like, it was so funny. I think one of my teachers kicked me out of class that day because I couldn't stop laughing. He was like, just go away. Just why are you here?
Christy, this is a common story. Remember when you told me about another teacher? This is on the podcast. I don't even have to reference. It's the English teacher when you're talking about Jude the Obscure and they told you to
be quiet. I was a sassy high schooler. I'm sure you're all shocked by that information that I was a sassy.
If only I'd gone to high school with like 20 people like you and Stuart.
I know.
I could have been sassy. School,
and you know what? I was getting really good grades and so they couldn't do a whole lot about it because it was like
we still had paddling in my school.
Oh jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. We had it in elementary school, but
yeah, we did, and we had the resource officer, which is really just like a security guard, but had a gun.
How do you paddle high schoolers? Like, that's too old.
It happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's wrong in general. Let's just... they should not be paddling students in schools, but like high school, that's crazy.
I don't even know. Well, because I never got that far. I will say I had a I played basketball with the principal's daughter, which was very helpful in general.
Like I got away with a lot of things because my mom taught there, and again, I had good grades, so they were like.
Although I did get sent to the principal's office my first day of class because my shorts were too short.
Oh.
We had the finger roll that had to go past.
We had uniforms.
The blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. One time my skirt was too, like, a quarter of an inch too short, maybe. And so they made me put on one of the skirts they had, like, in the back, which was three sizes too big. And I had to walk around all day holding it up.
Which is funny because that would be way more, like, damaging.
It's way worse. It's way worse that my skirt just can't stay up.
Meanwhile, the guys were walking around with Confederate flag t-shirts and like big ball brand t-shirts with like girls in bikinis washing cars, and it was fine. But that's
happy International Women's Day, by the way.
Happy International Women's Day.
Oh,
Stuart saw something at one stage. I can't remember what he was looking at, and I think at the same time I was on my period, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, y'all, it's a lot, isn't it?" And he's not like a diehard feminist or anything, but it comes to him sometimes.
He was like, oh, this sucks, doesn't it?
I think it was like the IVF stuff in Alabama, and he just was like, geez. He's like, it just kind of doesn't stop or something like that. And I said, yeah,
it doesn't. It's just getting progressively worse.
It is. Or is it just the way that it was in different ways? Because it's like, I just feel like I'm my first day of school with some weird ass gross coach, like measuring literally on my leg with a measuring tape.
I had to get on my knees in front of the principal. So, because your skirt had to touch the ground if you're on knees.
I have a lot of thoughts about that.
Yeah, it was bad. It was very bad. And that was a Christian high school also.
I mean, that part surprises me a lot.
0%, yeah, I know.
Yuck. Mm-hmm. Well, happy International Women's Day. Oh, we have an announcement, guys.
Oh, we do.
I don't know if we have the same one. Is it?
You go first. I think it's the same one, but.
You'd think we'd know. Christy and I talk all day. I think we started at like 8 a.m. this morning. And it's like we get on here like we haven't seen each other like 500 years.
You could assume that we've never spoken before.
We are coming to Theology Beer Camp.
We are.
In Denver.
It's Christy in Denver this year.
Christy's making me go.
Making you go. I am jazzed about it. Why do I keep saying this? I keep telling people that I'm jazzed about things, but I am. So
just make it a thing. It's like fetch. It's my
current thing to be excited about. So Theology Beer Camp is in Denver this year. We're going to have more information as we receive said information.
know that there's going to be a Hot Wings Redux.
There is going to be... Hot Wings 2.0
per request, Christy's really excited. I think people. This is what our friendship is going to be built upon. That I started her doing this.
I'm trying desperately to see if we have dates, but I don't think we have dates yet. I know it's in October.
No, you can go to. I would follow if you're on Instagram. Is it God Pods?
God Pods
2024.
Yeah. Oh yes, here we go. October 17th through October 19th.
Okay.
It is in Denver at St. Andrew United Methodist Church. There are tickets available at the moment, but we will have codes at some point. So hold off on getting your tickets until we have the code. We'll post it and we'll be very forthcoming about that. But yeah, follow.
We're gonna be more aggressive about the code this year because I think we were very last.
We were very last, and also we didn't know what was happening. So we were now first, that we know
First in personality, last in ticket sales.
First in personality, last in ticket sales. It's fine. So yeah, GodPods 2024 is the Instagram. We'll also be posting stuff. We've already started posting stuff, but we're very excited. It's gonna be.
Yeah.
It's a and great time.
I'll have my book. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be plural at that stage because I'm not sure what's gonna. I'm in the midst of writing one right now.
Leah will have either one or two books available, or and information about said second book.
Correct. Yeah. And I might be just sad. I'm just I won't be. It's funny when you get to like the second to the third. This is my third one now. I'm just like, yeah. Listen, y'all are on my time now. I'm sorry. you do get a little. I guess it's like when you get really good at. I'm not saying I'm really good at my job, but at some point you can just sort of start dictating things.
I think you are really good at your job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, but I think it's more just like time served.
Yeah, I think that at some point you just can't.
After Christy does this book, she's just going to be like a dictator. It's going to be crazy.
A nightmare. No one's going to want to talk to me. Yeah, so you will have one or two. I might have one. I don't have the release date for mine yet, okay. But I'm assuming by October, but you never know.
You don't know. Publishers
can be slow. So maybe we'll just have information. Either way, we'll have stuff for you.
Bad Theology will be there. I'll bring y'all.
Yeah, Bad Theology will be there. Maybe she'll even bring her first book and you guys can read
about Northern Ireland. You can read my PhD.
We'll take a poll.
You can. Good luck. I read it and couldn't even remember I'd written it. did I really know about this? Someone else.
So many smart thoughts.
I know I did, right? Did you feel that when you reread your PhD? You're like, wow.
I did. I was like, wow, look at how smart I was.
Kind of in a bubble and then you get out of it
because you have so much more time when you're doing your PhD, which is not to say you have a like you don't feel this at all, like you feel like you don't have time and you feel so like aggressively pressured about everything
when your life doesn't stop. Like I've taken this month off to write, but like it doesn't mean that my life stopped. Or my teaching like online stops.
I will also say, like, you have a dedicated person who's, like, just helping you write it, which also helps, like.
What do you mean, a dedicated person?
Your supervisor, like, giving you critiques and stuff, which is sometimes.
Oh, you're talking about your PhD. I was like, I thought you were talking about now. It's like,
oh, no.
Who is it? Where are they? And how much do they cost?
I mean.
I will feed them the ideas if they will just write it eloquently.
No, when you're doing your PhD, like you have 100%. That. You have that help. And
I was so
excited. You were like, Christy, are you offering me right now?
And I was gonna say, can I buy you? And by me, I mean Ken Stewart.
Ken Stewart. Tell Stewart to buy me a drink and I'll read your next book. You know I'm gonna read it anyway.
I know you're gonna read it anyway. because that's the whole
that's how it works. You find your readers, so
But also, yeah, so Beer Camp, it's happening. We're doing it. Mm-hmm. And we
petition for Casa Bonita during this as well.
You've heard about it. The legend.
You've heard about the legend.
Should we apply? We're going to
be just down the street.
Should we apply now?
We should. We should get on that wait
list. Can you do like a certain like date or is it like a lottery?
No, it's they send you an email. You get on the wait list and then they send you an email and they say, okay, your time has come, and then you can go in and pick a date for your reservation.
Yeah, that's how it was, because when I went to New York I did that for SNL and the David Letterman show. I'm aging myself, and funnily enough got it for David Letterman when I was going to be there.
Oh, nice.
But they call you and they ask you a question about David Letterman. Now I watched like late night like every other 90s kid, and he was like, who owns the bagel shop or the bakery beside the studio that he often interacts. I was like,
I don't know that.
And I just like made mouthing words, and bless this, I'm guessing intern. He just was like, did you mean this deli and bakery? And I was like, 100%. That's what I meant. And
he goes, absolutely what I just said. Mm-hmm.
He was like, great. Leah, you got tickets. That's wonderful. So I rocked up, and cause they were free. You just had to be in the, I rocked up. got to be on David Letterman, and I'll never forget. This was probably like 2000. I was in Atlanta, so 2000, like 4 to 7. And I came in, and you don't know who the guest is going to be. There was no musical guest. I was super disappointed. But you sat down, and I was with my friend, and I remember they were like, "And our special guest tonight, guess who it was?"
I have no idea.
Reality TV star.
Was it?
Entrepreneur.
Oh, gosh. No.
Donald Trump.
No. No.
Donald
no.
Trump.
No. Ugh.
If you go back to whenever those dates were of David Letterman, no. And you see Donald Trump, I was in that audience. And this is just The Apprentice years. Like, yeah. That's all that was. And I just remember looking at my friend being like, "Oh, my God." Like, I would have rather be outside.
He was like so obnoxious.
So obnoxious. And it was funny.
I remember him being so obnoxious back then. I was like, why do people watch this show? He's so obnoxious.
Well, but back then he was a TV villain, and that worked.
I mean, it did work. It was like, here's a TV villain.
Now he's like,
turns out that was his actual personality.
I was going to say, now he's the villain of our life. But like, he was at one stage a TV villain. And he was only a villain instead of to the American people. He was a villain to, just random apprentices.
Right. People.
But you could tell that David Letterman, like, was not. He One of his characteristics, I think, is not, like, suffering fools. And he was on the way out too, I think, and he just was
why is this happening to me right now?
Yeah, like why? Is
yeah, it yeah. was which like, I respect because I would have been the same way. Just like, why are you here?
Yeah,
what has happened to my show?
And you can't take any pictures, which sort of sucks. So no. I went to that, I guess 30 Rock or whatever it is, and I did it, but no pictures to show.
I didn't get to go to a show, but when we went to New York one time, we did get a tour of 30 Rock. So we got like to tour the SNL stage and stuff. And like,
that would be cool.
All that. It was really cool. It was super, super fun, but we didn't get to actually like see anything filmed.
I would make a trip out of going to see SNL if I could.
Absolutely. I would
put
do
in
that.
My name in the lottery and then.
Yeah. I did, however, when we were in Nashville when I was a kid, we went to some country talk show. I have no idea who the host was or like the person. Like, this is
what your great love of country.
I know, but would you like to know who we saw being interviewed?
Hopefully not Donald Trump.
It was not Donald Trump, but it was Brooks and Dunn. Do you remember Brooks and Dunn? Oh,
yeah, no, I listen to country music, Christy. I remember who Brooks and Dunn are. Yes,
and I was so excited because I thought that one of them was so cute. And if you paid me $1 million, I cannot tell you which one. I had truly atrocious taste in men when I was smaller.
Like, not now though.
Not now. No, now
you turned a corner. Don't worry. We all have. I'd still be on the bad guy train if Stuart hadn't been like, okay, we're going to stop this now. You're going to come with me.
somebody needs to come along and do that for me. But real, I mean, it wasn't like atrocious in the way it became when I was a teenager / adulthood. But like, it was just always old men who were not necessarily attractive. I was just like, you.
we're gonna post pictures of Rooks and Dunn so that we can.
And we'll see which one it was that I had a crush on.
Yeah, and it needs to be the year that you went to see this interview so that we can get the actual,
the
real life stuff.
The real visual for you all. We'll put that up.
Hey, Christy, do you want to talk about theology for just like a little while?
Just a tiny bit, yeah.
Like a little bit.
We veered so off course.
This drink is really. I hope you guys are going on this journey with us if you drink. Because it is I feel like everything we're saying will make sense more if you're drinking this drink.
This is surely one of those times when
I can't breathe. I'm feeling my chest is tight.
Okay. Oh gosh. Okay. Yeah. So you were recently at AAR Southeast.
That is correct. That is correct. As Stuart almost got evangelized, but not quite. He's so close. He got Evangi. He didn't get theized. Yeah, so I am vice president elect of AR Southeast. And if you didn't know, AR is American Academy of Religion, which someone did ask in our comments, yes, which is fair.
We've got to stop saying acronyms without telling people. AR, American Academy of Religion. It's the kind of large group for American or for religion scholars, not just Americans.
No,
it's international, really.
So. I can tell you, I'm gonna travel for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, but there's regions, which a lot of people maybe don't know.
Yes.
And we also have the same style conferences, and we do student papers, grad papers, and also academic scholar papers. So it's kind of the same as the big AR. It's just it is. Imagine instead of like 10,000 people, there's 300. Yep. So it's a lot smaller, but still like a really good group.
I love the regional conferences. They're really a good way to experience like new things, to meet people, and just to get a general sense of conferences if you're not used to them, without the kind of absolute hectic craziness that national AAR is.
Yeah, I had the connection from my boss at my previous job, and he was on, and then he cycled off, and then I was doing the student papers, and then I harassed there's no other word for it, a professor that's at the University of Georgia, telling him that I was going to take his job as soon as he retired. And I mean, I said it to the point that I think he thought I might murder him. And he nominated me to be vice president elect when he cycled off. I just wore him down.
That was his revenge for you harassing him.
He was like, "Well, you're just gonna have to wait, but it's gonna be a minute." He was mocking me at this one because he was giving out these little squishy Uggas, the little dogs.
Oh yeah.
He was like, "Leah, do you want one?" I was like, "Yeah, sure."
You're like, no.
Sure.
No, I don't. Yes.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I see you also have pens. I'll also take one. I just have a bunch of UGA grad school pens. Anyway, so we go. It's fun. You get to know people. I'm going to sneeze.
Bless you.
I sniffed the drink and that happened. Okay. So, Lord. Anyway, so we were in Charleston this time around. And the good thing, too, about depending on your region, you might get to visit places that are nice for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Charleston is a lovely place. It's hella expensive, but it's a nice place to visit.
So much better than Omaha.
Is that in your region?
It is. And it's the I was in the Rocky Mountain region for a long time, and we mostly had our conferences in Colorado, but occasionally we had to go to Omaha.
Oh, no. Ours are, so we're mostly what you think of as being the Southeast, so not Texas, sorry, but like everything else. But then we gained Virginia because they changed the maps this year. That was another thing I learned in the region. And we also gained the Caribbean, just so you
know. Oh.
I know.
Yes. Next one in the Bahamas.
I'm going to tell you. Well, the next one's in Miami, so we're making our way down
there. We're getting there.
Florida Memorial. It's HBCU. I think it's called Florida Memorial something. Uh-huh. Anyway, so we go down, and I am in charge of student papers. Like, I go and float around to some of the academic papers. But really, actually, for this conference, I do really focus on that group, not just because I have to like chair a lot of them, but also just because I like kind of seeing what the students are doing and kind of what's the new thing. And so I will say, these are not just like theology Christian scholars, but they are doing like all kinds of religious studies stuff of all religions, and some of them are even kind of like ancient. That we still have a SBL. Oh, we're not allowed to say that. We still have a biblical study.
Sorry. I was gonna say not SBL.
We did not have an SBL.
We'll allow for biblical studies papers.
We have biblical studies papers that come. And so like some of them are just like ancient texts. Like, it's very kind of loosely based. And so I don't deal with that part.
No.
But shout out to my colleague Matt Goff at FSU, who is great at that. I'll be like, there's Greek, take it. I can't do it.
I don't understand this. It's been too long. Yeah.
It's too long. So anyway, yeah, so I was able to see some of that. And so today we thought we would talk about some of the more interesting papers that we maybe have come across that are maybe in our world or not in our world. Because these conferences are really big and a lot of these papers really kind of fall into the background sometimes because it just becomes like, I don't know, they just get filed. But then there's some that really stand out for us. And yeah. So we thought we would talk about those.
I think too, especially when you go to the regional conferences, they're not quite so, you're not so siloed off with like, like at the national conference, there's like, you know, the practical theology panels and the arts and literature panels and the hip hop and theology panels and the systematic theology. You know, you go to your thing and, and you just only hear about those things. But when it's the regional conferences, because it's a smaller group, sometimes they'll like mix things together. And so you get, you know, still a theme, but not necessarily quite so rigid. So you do get a little bit more interaction beyond your field, which I think is super important and also really interesting, you know?
Yeah. Like one of my student paper groups were controversies, ? In religion. So are they? And so it was everything from Satanism to drugs and religion. So doing drugs and participating in religion and the death penalty.
Yeah.
So it was like a really wide scope in terms of like papers there.
Yeah. So. Which is so cool to like, you get to go listen to people's thoughts about those. What was one that stood out to you?
At this conference or just in general?
Just in general, like a paper you remember.
I think the first paper that really stuck with me was I get a little, this is known, so it's not like the liquor talking, although it is that I get a little annoyed with my practical theology group, which they know. I've shouted it at several meetings from the back as I hang out with like all the Scottish scholars. They're a little like American, what do you call it? Where Rika's from?
Finland.
Well, no, but that area.
Oh, Scandinavia.
Yeah, like America, Scandinavia. If you can make that a word, that sounds cool.
Okay.
That's centric. And as a result of that, it sort of excludes some of the scholars that I really find to be very important. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was sitting in the back with all the Aberdeen crew, like John Swinton, Leon, like all of, you know, Katie Cross, all of these folks that I hold in very high regard. And it just felt like we were just like additions to the party. So sometimes I get annoyed with that. But I'm working to change it. And I'm working with it. And I will keep submitting papers.
You will get there. You will.
I will. And if not, I'll go back to the Gaiman in religion because they accept
they were fantastic.
Who I am. So, but anyway, one of the first, so the point of me telling that story is not to rag on them, although hello, but also there's some good scholars in Scotland, y'all. But also I'm never gonna get a job. So anyway, part of the thing is that I typically kind of just go to what looks interesting.
Yeah.
I've gotten less like that as the years have passed because I have more responsibilities in official things, which is my own fault.
That is your fault.
It is my own fault. But I used to just go. So one of the ones that I love going to, I love psychology. It's my second love to religion. I have an undergraduate degree. Maybe we'll soon have a postgraduate degree. We'll see if I can afford it. But anyway, so I love psych. I love all of that stuff. And especially kind of psychiatry and like the brain stuff. So I went to a thing that was the religion and psychology group. I don't know its official title, but that's what it is. And they had done brain scans of monks. Buddhist monks.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
When they had meditated. And so they had up on the screen like the monks before and after when they meditated.
Yeah.
And like the different parts of the brain. And then they compared it to a former Catholic who is now an atheist repeating the Hail Mary, or the rosary rather, and the same bits didn't light up. It was so and so there's this one bit that they called, they used, they said like the God bit or the God connection or something, even though like, it's Buddhism and doesn't have a God, but whatever. But there's this one thing that like they studied it, that like when people who were really, who were religious, when they prayed, this bit just lit up.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was crazy. So I walked out of that and I was like, I shook hands with the people after. I have no idea who they are, but like, it was just super cool.
The part that breaks my heart is that I sometimes I'll hear these papers and I'll go talk to the people and be like, you know, this is so interesting. And then I get their information and then there's nothing I can do about it. Like,
no,
I don't do anything in this field. What am I going to contact them about?
I think they were like Johns Hopkins or something, like doing like brain scans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it's
such an interesting thing to talk about, like ideas of religion and psychology and all of that. I know other people who've done work on it. It's fascinating stuff.
It's so cool because they said, and I believe in that, they didn't go in expecting to find anything, but it was just that because I think they were like psychiatrists who just were doing this
mm-hmm.
study, but that this bit just kept lighting up.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know, like, and it's a bit, they did mention this in the paper, that they've never seen light up on scans. Because, you know, they'll scan people's brains and get them to read a book or recall things or whatever. You know, if they speak a different language, like there's, uh-huh. you know, there's different parts. And they'd never seen that bit light up.
Wow. That's so interesting. Oh, my gosh. I want more of this.
I know. Oh. I'm sorry. I wish I had more. I think that was like 8 years ago. They probably like figured out everything
now. It happens to me every time I hear papers, though. This is the beauty of like listening to other people's work, is that you get excited again, you know.
Oh, it's like, so important.
It's so important to do. Yeah.
I get all grumpy about just like political stuff, like you heard before, and I'll be like, I'm not going back.
I know, it's always like,
and then I'll be like, okay,
and then you go, and it's so like life-giving, honestly. I hate saying that, but like,
no, it is, especially
it is.
It shows that you're really into the subject.
Yeah.
Like if I was to go to like a math conference, I can't say I would get quite that same.
Can you imagine?
Maybe that's the bit in our brain that's lighting up, Christy. Who knows?
You know what? Honestly, I want to go to a math conference and just tell them all that I don't believe in math and they need to convince me of it. See what happens.
You should. Based on the people I know who do math.
It wouldn't go well.
I don't think they'd talk to you very long.
They would just walk away.
They'd just walk away.
This is my favorite joke to tell students, is that I don't believe in math. And then they look at me like I've said something like the most atrocious thing that they've ever heard, and I laugh.
I have a friend who's a math professor in CANT, and I tell him all the time that you just made it up like everybody else made stuff up. And
yep.
It goes down really well, as you
can. Well, I find it to be like such an interesting rebuttal, because you know, so many people will tell us, oh, I don't believe in religion.
Yeah, I don't believe in math.
I don't believe in math, so we're on the same page here.
Social construct. Yeah, no. So what was your early days, what was maybe your favorite paper that stuck with you?
Yeah, so early days, I went to this conference. It was, I believe it was the one in, no, it was in Denver.
In Omaha. She was rocking in a corner in Omaha somewhere.
You know what? I mean, Omaha is not the most amazing city I've ever been to, but it's not a terrible city. Actually will give it some credit. And also, it was a really good conference in general. I met lots of interesting
people. But Omaha apologetics tour.
This is going to be about when I was in Denver. I went to a panel, and it was primarily not religious scholars, which was really interesting to have a whole panel of people who were in other fields, but they were doing something like tangentially about religion. Mm-hmm. And this one guy did his paper. He did a field study on a biker gang.
Ooh.
And talked about the religious aspects of biker gangs. I learned so much. And this is like Sons of Anarchy was in its heyday when I heard this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had like kind of started watching that because of another friend of mine. But like I learned there's tons of hierarchy and protocol. Like you can't just go approach the like leader of the biker gang. You have, there's like, it's kind of, it's similar to like the monarchy.
I was going to say, or like working at a university.
Yeah. Or like, you know, any kind of figurehead, but his was particular, like we learned all these kinds of ins and outs of being in a biker gang, but his was particularly about the religious aspects of it. And it was a really fascinating study about like, you know, communities and how small communities, especially smaller communities like biker gangs, where you're like, you know, biker gangs are all over the place, but you're really tightly knit into a rather small group of people. Mm-hmm. And then you like have religious aspects develop out of that. And it can be like Christian religion generally, but like the way you're practicing and stuff again, because these are all societal constructs. We're all doing religion the way that it makes sense to us in our context. But it was just such a fascinating topic of like,
did you like immediately go out and buy a biker jacket and try to join?
Let me tell you that, because I was like nominally watching Sons of Anarchy prior to that talk, and then I became hardcore into Sons of Anarchy.
Ooh, nice. I do like the main guy, something. I don't know. He's supposed to be the gray guy in 50 Shades Gray, and then he wasn't. Not that I was keeping up with it. Anyway, the hot one.
But no, my favorite was Opie. Was like his best friend. Opie was my favorite. Because you hear a lot of these kind of ethnographic studies of people groups, and they usually are talking about like once I heard a talk about a hippie commune in Tennessee, and it was interesting, but it was like a very, you know, this is what you normally look at in religious studies, is like communes of religious people or like, you know, convents or whatnot. And to have it be about the, like the religion of a biker gang was such a fascinating look at this microcosm, you know? One of my students told me after, he was like, I was just watching you the whole time this talk was going on, and you were just like so into it. And I was like, it was such a good talk. Like, I was so fascinated by the whole thing.
Well, and even when I think about all the talks that like that when we discussed doing this, all the papers that I like the most, almost none of them have to do with what I do.
Oh yeah, no, they're always something like, I could never have come up with this. Yeah. You know, this isn't something that I would necessarily be able to conceive of or like follow through with, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have the particular skills. That set of skills is not mine.
When I went to Denver, I heard one the first time. I feel like I've been a million times now, but the first time I heard it was like New Religious Movements group. And I heard them. I had two dogs in this fight. I had just watched Up and Vanished, or listened to Up and Vanished, the podcast. That was about Crestone, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've not seen or listened to that podcast, you like true crime, it's super interesting. I would please tell me what happened to this girl. Anyway, there's like a mom who moved to this place.
Let's also please be very wary of Creston.
I would generally, there was also, yeah, the Mother of God thing was in Creston too. So, you know, just be aware.
Look, we don't have a lot of oxygen in Colorado, okay?
and drugs are available. So, you know.
Yeah, readily, yeah.
So, but the talk was comparing Creston with Asheville, North Carolina. And I had just recently moved to North Carolina at this stage. And my friend Misty, my maid of honor, had come to visit me. And we met kind of in the middle in Asheville. And it was funny because we'd walk down the streets of Asheville. And I think this is really representative of the city, is that on one side there was like all of these, it was like a gay, well, it was Pride, basically. And then on the other side there was all these like, you know, you're going to hell, like protesting what was happening across the road. And there were booths, there were, you know, churches which I was happy to see that we're supporting Pride and all this stuff. Anyway, so she and I went to brunch, and she was just like, wow, that's like a really weird divide. And I was like, yeah, it is. And actually, North Carolina went to the Supreme Court very recently because of gerrymandering, where they would try to like split up cities.
Yeah.
And Asheville was one of the main cities that got split, because you've got a whole town full of kind of hippie yuppies, and you got the mountain people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a mountain person, so I can speak mm-hmm. from the mountain people perspective, but they typically do have a more conservative leaning thing in mm-hmm. the South anyway. So you've got this sort of clash of cultures that's happening, but the paper was about how these two cities apparently, at least to certain communities, are considered to have sacred like rock.
Oh.
Sacred stone in the mountains.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that this is what draws people to mm-hmm. these places. Is this not just because, you know, and we've lumped together now twice the group hippies, which is not necessarily fair, but I'm too yeah. much liquor into
we've had to straight liquor. Like
people who are living alternative lifestyles, maybe off the grid, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. following a combination of different spiritualities.
Alternative path of life.
There we go. something that I can't imagine, because I'd be so grumpy and tired and dirty and angry. I couldn't be I couldn't be spiritual for a single minute. They'd be like, do you want to do drugs? I'd be like, that's not gonna help. but they compared Crestone, and they said there was like this like, and it I one of the I will say the most interesting parts is apparently the native people of both those lands also thought that, like, it wasn't just like a
oh interesting
thing. Yeah, yeah, it's historically yeah. that there was something about these places that were special, and that's what draws. So, you know, it's interesting for religious studies purposes is that you get these groups that get drawn there because of this kind of historical narrative, and then they mm-hmm. form their own communities. And then also what they do with the neighboring communities is interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
As I will say, in that Up and Vanished, there was like a real divide between like yeah. the townies, if you want to call them that,
oh,
and
for
like
sure.
and then the people that came in to like do drum circles, which is where for that sure. that girl yeah. died. Yeah. So.
Well, and you see that in the Mother God.
Yeah.
What is it called? Love is One or something like that.
Yeah.
The documentary on HBO. I mean, and being from Colorado, I know how city people and mountain people clash, you know?
Yep.
And it can be a difficult kind of interaction.
Yeah. My parents are mountain people now, so that's
well, and especially as like mountain towns tend to be, and this is coming from a very Colorado perspective, but mountain towns tend to be a real issue of extreme wealth and poverty.
Mm-hmm,
I'm not
mm-hmm.
going to say extreme poverty, but poverty, because to live in some of those mountain towns is insanely expensive. But they don't pay workers enough. So I don't know where I saw this. There's a town in, oh no, I'm going to completely forget. It's a town in Colorado, I think. It's one of the mountain towns. Wants to pay $167,000 a year salary for an HR rep.
I want to know HR immediately.
It is not a livable wage in that town.
Oh, never yep. mind.
And I know, and I remember, I'm trying to remember which town it is, but it is not. I know this personally. And so no one's applying. They're having a huge problem getting somebody to apply because you cannot afford to live in that town for that salary. And that's an insanely, like, I would die for that salary, honestly. Like,
there's some degree salary. Of that in North Georgia, but I mean, I would say poverty overwhelmingly.
Like, yeah, but like Colorado, because you have the ski towns, so like Vail, Aspen, Crested Butte, Telluride. Celebrities own places there. And I know this is a problem in Hawaii too. And so in that Love Is One documentary, they talk about when they moved to Hawaii and the Hawaiians were like, get out. It did not go well. This is the same problem in the mountain towns. There's only so much space. You can't build farther out. Like, you can only build so much in the mountains because it is the mountains. Like,
yeah,
you can't do it. And so when you have super limited land and half of it is going to these millionaires who just wanted a, you know, fourth or fifth home, and then you need service people, you need people to clean your house and to work in restaurants and stuff like that, and then you don't want to pay them to live there. But again, in Colorado you have snow, so they can't live too far away or they can't get to their job.
Sounds terrible
when it's winter, you know. No problem.
Well, with the North Carolina issue, I would say it's less about, I mean, there are some resorts, but it's definitely more about city versus rural,
yeah.
Which is a huge reason why North Carolina is a purple state. But I will say actively, and again, shout out to this upcoming election, that we have a super majority of Republicans right now.
Yeah.
In the state, and we have a Democratic governor, and we do flip and flop all over the shop. But part of that is because you have Charlotte, you've got Raleigh-Durham, mm-hmm. you've got Asheville, you've got these cities that are big in Wilmington, you've got these cities that are big enough to kind of have a significant vote. But then you've got incredibly conservative people, and what they're doing is they're splitting the maps and making it so. And we're watching it happen. And right now, I'm going to tell you, there is a person who's running for governor that mm-hmm. I have not seen the like of. Even in Donald Trump, it's
real bad. Shocking. He's a Holocaust denier.
It's shocking. An African, he would be our first African American governor, and he is
a Holocaust denier. I cannot. We have
he thinks like the civil rights movement wasn't that great.
And we have living people who lived through World War II and the Holocaust. They are still alive, and this kind of stuff happens. I can't.
Anyway, off that. What's your next favorite?
My next favorite is going to be a combo of two because they were basically the same topic and in the same session. And they were both revisioning of images or like iconography. And one was a revisioning of the Virgin of Guadalupe.
Mm.
And so she was coming at it from a very artistic standpoint, but a lot of it was revisions of the image. So icons, this is mostly like Catholic or Eastern Orthodox, some kind of Episcopalian Anglo-Catholic denominations have lots of icons, you know, where you've got a kind of image of a saint or the Trinity or Jesus or what have you. And they tend to always be very like subdued, like the kind of famous image, the icon of the Trinity. I can't blanking on his name because of alcohol. I'm looking at it right now. But they're all kind of like heads down, you know. So the Virgin of Guadalupe tends to be pictured this way where she's got her head. She's looking at the ground. She's very subdued. And this woman was talking about how a lot of people are reclaiming that image in more feminist and queer tones.
Mm.
And so they would repaint the Virgin as looking up, which it seems simple, but like just that head change gave her more of a stance of power. They would paint her in more modern day clothes, or even sometimes paint her like as a sex worker or a drag queen or a trans woman. All sorts of different ways that they were painting the Virgin and kind of using it to reclaim a specific issue of patriarchy that happens a lot, especially in Mexican culture. And so she was addressing it from that very specific standpoint. And it was just super interesting to see the different ways that the actual like art of these icons was so liberating for people. And anyone who follows our Instagram can clearly tell that I'm obsessed with icons because I post a lot from the Kelly Lattimore's icons. I like repost hers on our stories. And so I just think it's a really cool way to look at different figures or people who are inspiring. And I just really, and it comes out of this talk that I saw of that re-imaging. And then the second one that was like right after her was a man talking about different images of Christ as a Black man. Mm-hmm. And, kind of the notion of what a Black Jesus would look like. And he actually came from it from a more kind of critical stance of like different aspects of Black Jesus. So when you think about typical pictures of Jesus in whiteness, right, he always kind of looks emaciated and right, like especially yes. if he's on the cross, like what happened, like he looks like he hasn't eaten in 3 months or something.
I know. Yeah.
But if you get pictures of this, and he was saying like that a lot of the images when it's a Black man, he's very muscular and stuff, and he was talking a lot about how this way of shifting is actually also problematic, because it was discussing the, he was talking a lot about the ways that Black men are overly emphasized as athletic, like just because you're Black you can play sports, or just because you're Black, you know. And he mentioned something about like this theory that Black men had extra muscles that I had never heard before. But
I think I've heard that in the terrible KKK stuff.
It was really interesting because he was addressing, like, on the surface it's like, oh, positive because it's an image of Jesus as a Black man, but actually, like, here are all the other ways that it's also a problem and still perpetuating these racial stereotypes. Super fascinating. But it was all, like, again, it was all visual art kind of stuff that I just found really fascinating. I'm not at all qualified to speak on visual art, but like find it super interesting to think about the ways that pictures of stuff influence how we understand theology and then also understand ourselves. So
I think I have one more, if you have one. Sure.
I have one more too. Yeah.
Okay. So my last one was actually a student paper that was at this conference. So it feels like a nice way for me to wrap it up.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting paper. I will say one of the things I'm amazed about, especially at certain schools here in North Carolina, is the level to which their students do things like qualitative research, where they actually go to the countries for like a senior research project. Like,
that is awesome.
It's amazing. I will give a shout out to Elon University because they support that sort of study a lot.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It'd be amiss of me not to point that out. So this project was not from there, but it was from someone who is at Davidson College, which is also in North Carolina. I'll find the name and the title and all of that, because he definitely deserves credit. And it was a public talk, so it's not privacy stuff. But like, he did a paper, and he I had a lived religion group, and his paper was in this group. And he was another one of these folks who just went like above and beyond, because he actually did surveys. So he did this kind of like look into, and he goes to he currently goes to a church that he was Christian, goes to a church that is very like educated, and essentially they you know, do a lot of basically in-depth studies of stuff. Mm-hmm. And but what he found is that when he went to, I'm finding the name right now, all the stuff keeps popping up, Harrison Mazurki at Davidson. So he did this paper. But he found that there was a real disconnect between what people learned in seminary and actually how they presented it to the church. And so he wanted to find out specifically about historical critical method in the Bible, which is essentially just like acknowledging that there's a history to the Bible and its construction. And that, you know, his specific example is like, they can't find that there was an actual census.
Yeah.
In the New Testament, but they needed Jesus to be born in Bethlehem, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The census gets kind of inserted in. So anyway, he did a survey of 3,000 ministers throughout the Southeast. It's so many. He did it proportionally based on different denominations, and he got the information back, and he asked them. He did pie charts, which is my favorite because I love when pie charts are just super, super overwhelming. It was something he said. How many of you all teach the Bible, like you learned in seminary, to your congregants? And 90% said that they didn't.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, wow. I'm both horrified and not surprised.
And he went further on and he asked them, like, there was some sort of stuff that you could do that, like, you know, do you have anything further to say? And Essentially the overwhelming feeling that the ministers gave to him was that that's not what people come. People don't come to church to hear that stuff. And so I know, right? But I mean, some of these, I know, but like my denomination was up there, which is highly educated, very liberal, like, It was across the board. I mean, he had Southern Baptists. He had Universalists up there. And it's like they didn't teach what they learned in seminary about the Bible specifically because they didn't think it's what people came to church to hear. If I could summarize it, I mean,
again, I am both horrified and not surprised at all.
I know. I felt the same way because then I asked the question in my mind. I didn't ask it out loud so as not to hog time,
mm-hmm.
guys. what's the point then of us going to seminary as one who went? Like,
I mean, and also like, how do we, I remember having this conversation in class at seminary once, how do we bridge the gap between the academics of theology and what goes on in churches so that we don't have, because here's the thing. I think this is what you and I want to highlight today is like really, really interesting conversations are happening in academia. Like these conferences and the regional ones are much more accessible for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to necessarily be affiliated with a school or anything to attend one of these. If you were like, I want to go to one of these regional conferences, you could do that. You're going to have to pay the conference fee, but like you could, you know.
I think ours was like $25. So
yeah, it's not expensive.
It's a lot cheaper.
It's a lot smaller. So you could actually interact with people. And you could come and hear some of these really fascinating talks that are going on. You don't have to like be like, oh, I wish I could get a PhD. You don't have to, you know? And as a kind of minor plug, Theology Beer Camp also has this. And this is one of the things that they're trying to do is like put out for people who aren't in academia, these kinds of conversations that are going on, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, one of the crazy things too about the survey this kid did is that he said that, and this ties into what you're saying, that he asked, okay, you don't teach it, but do you believe it? Again, almost 90% yes.
Yeah.
So it's not that they didn't buy into it.
Yeah. It's not that they believe the value it. Of it. Yeah.
They just didn't know how to translate it in a way that was like.
So many of these conversations are also like, I mean, I loved the biker gang one, but like you can also talk about that. Churches are, there was a church in Colorado Springs that's like, it's called Cowboy Church. It's set up for cowboys to go to. Mm-hmm. You know, like there are churches that are set up for specific microcosms of culture. Why not interact with some of the stuff that's being explored and researched about these people? You know, why not teach the stuff that you're learning in seminary? And it's partly because we've we've made church into a place where you can go just so you can feel good about yourself rather than actually learn.
That was his conclusion.
Yeah.
Is basically, it's not about critical think. I mean, I'm not trying to put words in this young man's mouth, but what I got out of it was that people are going to church to feel good and to be uplifted. Mm-hmm. And this idea of critical thinking in their minds is in contrast to that.
Yeah. Well, and they're going to feel good. They're going to be uplifted. They're also going to have their confirmation.
Yeah. To feel stable,
you know, like there are, it's confirmation bias, right? I believe these things. I want you to affirm that I believe these things.
He used the example of, you don't want to go to like a Christmas, like nativity scene and start talking about how the census might not be real. It made me laugh. Cause I was like, I mean, true.
Honest, true story. One time I was in a Bible study. These women who I loved, we were good friends, we were hanging out, and one of them was a kindergarten teacher, and she was talking about how, because she worked at a Christian school, so she was making nativity sets out of toilet paper rolls with her kindergartners.
Okay.
She had to make a whole bunch of stuff ahead of time because she had to use a hot glue gun, and you obviously cannot give a kindergartner a hot glue gun.
What?
And and she was complaining about it. And I said, well, why not just leave out the three wise men? So they weren't, cause they weren't there anyway. And I got absolutely destroyed. They were so mad at me.
Can't drop that foundation shake. Rude, Chris.
I was almost kicked out of Bible study for the millionth time that day. I almost got kicked out of.
They were supposedly Zoroastrians. Did you know that's
they were thing. They were magi. They were Zoroastrians. There were probably 12 of them, and they came when he was 2 in Egypt. So,
oh God, listeners, I hope it's not Christmas when you're listening.
Put the wise men, actually, because I was in charge of setting up the nativity scene.
Oh Lord,
department at CCU.
They gave you that. They let you do that after this.
Well, they were on board with this. They, because okay. They were like, you have to make it biblically accurate. So I'd put Jesus and Mary and Joseph on one side of the little lobby area, and then I'd put the wise men on the other side of the lobby area.
They haven't got there yet.
They're all right. On their way, guys.
It's gonna take a couple years.
It's gonna take a bit.
That's amazing.
Anyway,
it was interesting because it's interesting because you know it in your head kind of, and mm-hmm. you experience, but then for someone to go and actually do the ground research and and the ministers be like, no, we believe it, we learned it, we just don't know how to tell people about it in a way that's going to do church as you said, the way they want church. So, and that's
the point of this conversation is, guys, you need to vote for things that promote education in this country because we need better, more accessible education. We need teachers to be paid better.
Yeah.
So that the populace is willing and eager and ready to learn. That's
and they don't associate critical thinking with being the devil. Upset or yeah. being upset, like that you can still be affirmed and have and some of
like
your
somebody like
deconstructed.
You yeah. should be able to critique people that you love. You should be able to say, like, you know, I am a big fan of Catherine Tanner, but here are my problems with her. Like,
yeah, 100%.
That is appropriate because we're not talking about some infallible being when we're talking about these people, you know. It's
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a human construct. I saw someone on our Theology on the Rocks group, I think it was Tim from New Evangelicals, there was some person he tagged that was like, I went on a rabbit hole a little bit, and they were like, there's this grand meta narrative of Christianity and deconstructionists would make you think that it's all relative, and I'm like, what's the narrative? Globally take me to the narrative.
Yeah,
where is it? And they're like, it's all, they want you to think it's all relative, and I'm like, what? And I'm interested if you're correct, but show it to me.
Yeah, like, I feel like, you know, it's again, I feel like the farther we've gotten, and I have lots of thoughts and opinions about the state of education. As a side note, I have actual, like, I did an education degree in college. I was a secondary ed major. I taught seventh grade for years. So, like, I know stuff, right?
She's legit, guys. Legit.
There are things that have moved us away, and there's a bunch of research saying that we have moved away from teaching people how to learn, just like the fundamentals of learning. Apparently, and I didn't realize this, this is past when we were in elementary, but they don't teach phonics anymore. They were teaching phonics, sounding out stuff, and then they were like, no, we're just going to do it a different way. And then they realized that all of these students don't know how to read anymore, so they've gone back to phonics, but we have a whole generation of people who don't know how to read. I saw a report that the average American reads at a sixth grade reading level.
Oh.
Sixth grade. And this was not just a generation. This was the average American. And I was like, oh my, nope, this is bad.
Maybe I shouldn't try so hard on my book.
Well, and you know, it's
I have a middle school down the street. I could just recruit a ninth grader.
Go see if they can get, I mean, because the problem isn't that just certain people have chosen not to learn. It's that we've failed at teaching people how to learn. And then we promoted stuff that's not learning. And then we've just been okay with everybody not learning for so long that it's hard to get people back into the mode of learning. So all these people coming out of seminary who've learned these important things, but then they get to their congregation and they're like, nobody wants to learn this.
Yeah.
And that's not, they're not wrong. You know,
I know. And it's hard because what do? They got to have a job. Like,
it's you're swimming uphill, you know, or upstream.
Yeah.
100%. Swimming uphill would be really hard.
Or uphill. That'd be
even worse. Maybe it's that.
Man. So, Christy, we're at 86.
I know. We're so far past our usual.
But, we are. Do you want to say your last paper?
I'm just going to tell you my last favorite paper was a paper about, and there's not a lot of conversation to be had, but it was a paper about the image of God in the villains of horror movies, focused primarily on like those, you know, old school ones like Friday the 13th and stuff. And it was really interesting. Dealt with a lot of issues of disability and stigma around disability. It was really a good paper, but...
All right, well, guys, I think we could probably keep going on this, but we have drank too much liquor, and we're just going to go on a rant about education and politics if we can continue. So, if you want to have that conversation, please join us at Theology Beer Camp.
Yep, because I'm sure we'll talk about it there too, and eat horrible hot wings.
Oh, I'm excited.
You're not. You cried.
I cried. Did I cry? Yeah, no, I did cry for sure. But not like ball cry, but just like perpetually.
Just leaked. Some like it was leakage.
It's just leaking.
Constant leakage.
I had to think, and then I was like, "Oh yeah, my graveyard of napkins is my go-to." So we get to do that again.
Oh, so excited! Fun. Yeah,
we probably will get our questions beforehand though. So at some stage we might start soliciting them as opposed to me just. Harassing
everyone there. Barrett. We'll do it.
Although we got some pretty stellar ones.
It was pretty fantastic.
All right, guys. Well, see you later. Love you.
Bye. Enjoy St. Christopher's drink.
Yeah, if you can. Bye.